This is Jim Inkster. Coming next on the show, we will visit with Kevin Cope, president of the LSU Faculty Senate. He has some thoughts about what's happening at the Old War School. For the first time in a while, the budget has been increased, but much of it involves a tuition hike. We'll talk with Kevin Cope about what's going on and whether things are improving as far as funding and attention to higher education in Louisiana. Also on the show is Jensen Moore, an LSU mass communication professor, with some insights about the Super Bowl ads, those that were successful and those that were not, as advertisers paid over $4 million a spot for placement during the Super Bowl. Some familiar faces, including Bob Dylan, featured Sunday. We'll talk about it. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local number. We hope you'll dial it if you have something to say to Kevin Cope, who's our leadoff guest. And if you're dialing outside the Baton Rouge area, 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Thanks for being with us. Kevin Cope, the president of the Faculty Senate at Louisiana's flagship university for the last 7 years, and in his 31st year at Louisiana State University, professor of English, master's from Harvard, PhD from Harvard, came to LSU and he stayed for 31 years and counting. And reading his bio, it says that there is a forthcoming book, John Locke Revisited. It says forthcoming 1999. I think the English department needs to upgrade its bio of you, Kevin Cope.
Well, I would agree with that, a lot of upgrades are necessary up there at the Old War School, but it's always a pleasure to be here with the King of Cultivated Controversy.
King of Cultivated Controversy. I like that. I'm into alliteration, and Kevin Cope has an alliterative name. And yesterday, one of your favorite people, Jesse the Body and now the Brain Ventura, was on the show.
Well, as you know, Jim, I've been a fan of professional wrestling for nearly 45 years as a young man. I used to go to the Olympic Auditorium in Los Angeles. I've seen some of the greats, Mil Máscaras, Freddie Blassie, John Tolos. I've seen them all in that squared circle.
You would venture from San Diego to Los Angeles to see professional wrestling when you were a kid, right?
Indeed, I was. I would. That was my 10th birthday present, was a trip from San Diego to the Olympic Auditorium.
Who brought you?
At the time, my mother was in the midst of kind of a messy divorce, so it was that classic interloper, a boyfriend.
A boyfriend brought you and indoctrinated you into professional wrestling. Not many people, maybe I'm being presumptive, but not many people who go to Harvard and get their master's and PhD grew up watching pro wrestling on a regular basis.
Well, that may be, but, you know, Freddie Blassie always used to say that Muhammad Ali learned everything that he knew from him. In some sense, that's true. I learned just about everything I know today from professional wrestling. It's a good epitome of metaphysics, of philosophy, of physics, you name it. We've even got a professor at LSU who's given a few papers on the topic, so it's a legitimate theme for academic inquiry.
Who is the professor?
I believe that's John Cogburn over in the philosophy department.
Well, it sounds like he's going to be asked to be a guest sometimes.
So. Well, I hope so. Just make sure that he's got his trunks on underneath that suit.
Well, Kevin, you look like in your day you might have been able to get in the squared circle.
Well, I certainly think so. I continue to exercise the art of leverage, and I continue to deal with a place where the use of foreign objects and other sorts of cheating is routine enough. So I think I've continued the quest.
You have opined a time or two about the state of affairs at Louisiana State University, sometimes inflaming the internal masses. And by the way, Friday, we're pleased that we're scheduled to have as a guest the president of LSU, president and chancellor, King Alexander. That would be a great name for a pro wrestler, by the way.
Well, I think any time you bring royalty into the picture, you get a kind of enameling going on. No question about that.
So we have Kevin and we have King. The two Ks running Louisiana State University. Well, how are things going right now?
Well, that's a very good point. That is, I think that King Alexander has done a number of things that are correct. One is he's reached out to the various constituencies. He's gone out to the Rice Farm. He's met with students. He's gone up to Shreveport. And in general, he's made an attempt to draw the state together with regard to its educational policy. Also, what he's done is mount that big forum with the Obama people who came to town to take testimony. That was something of an accomplishment to pull off a Democratic fact-gathering venture in the midst of our near totalitarian Republican regime. That having been said, of course, there's still a long way to go. That is, we need to move, for example, from discussions about the question of retention, graduation, and purely undergraduate teaching to talking a little bit more about all of the purposes of the university that include research and public service as well. In other words, King Alexander is very competent in the area of improving the undergraduate curriculum. And for all I know, he's competent in a dozen areas as well. But he's got to get out there on the track, make the laps, and get to that particular finish line.
Well, Bobby Jindal, our governor, says colleges will receive an additional $141.5 million in the current budget, or the one that's coming for the fiscal year. But of the $141.5 million, $88 million is coming from a tuition hike. So leaves $53.5 million, so that's an increase. But the $141.5, let's face it, most of it's coming from the pockets of students.
Well, I think that's true. A couple of things that are important to recognize here. One is, of course, that at least this marks a change in the tone of the regime. Rather than expressing hostility to education or claiming that public servants ought to be thrown out on their ear for laziness and underperformance, at least the governor is talking about stabilizing the universities. That much is good. On the other hand, you're exactly right that to declare this an increase in funding when, in fact, it's only a recycling of what universities earn through tuition and, dare I say, even though it is a new tax by increasing the cost that taxpayers pay, classic Bush-era technique to call a user fee, to call it a user fee rather than to call it a tax, we are talking about putting a tremendous burden on the people. Now, that having been said, of course, our tuition here in Louisiana has long been below the regional average and the market value. Students at LSU, as King Alexander points out, have a very affordable experience, but it's a little bit of a boast to present this as a massive increase in educational funding.
But it is an improvement.
It certainly is an improvement. I think it's mostly an improvement in tone and it's an improvement in stabilization. If the submarine is going down fast and the pressure gauge indicates that you're about to blow up, if you could just get on the level, you'll be okay.
297-5633 for the man of mirth and elocution. Kevin Cope. Hugh Buckingham calling from Oklahoma, formerly Hugh at LSU. Good morning, Hugh. You're on the air with Dr. Kevin Cope.
How are you doing, Kevin? Good to hear your voice.
I'm doing a lot better now that I've heard from Hugh Buckingham.
Yeah, I have a question about the recent Alexandria summit. In just a few words, could you give me the take of the Democratic candidate for governor and his talk to your group?
I think what you're talking about, you, is in fact a meeting that's coming up. For those who might know what you is mentioning, he's talking about a quarterly meeting that occurs on the campus of LSU in Alexandria of statewide faculty governance leaders, other faculty, Senate presidents, people who are professors who care about the academy. This coming Saturday, we're going to hear from John Bell Edwards, who is a Democratic candidate for governor. We've also heard from him at the faculty senate. But, of course, his take is what you might expect it to be. One is that we need to diversify the interests of public education. Another is that we need to find some revenues that will support education rather than clinging to an outdated, superstitious notion about no new taxes. The third is that we need to pay attention to the needs of Louisiana. John Bell Edwards, of course, was also quick to explain to the faculty senate at LSU that he understood that the university was not just a machine for workforce development, for the creation of sausage factory workers. Now, don't get me wrong, I like sausage just as well as anybody else. But, of course, the business of the university is to explore the frontiers of human knowledge. Certainly, John Bell Edwards made it clear to those who heard him that that was one of his goals.
Thank you, Hugh at LSU. Anything else on your mind from the Sooner State, Hugh? No. an emphatic no from Hugh Buckingham. But John Bel Edwards, he went to West Point as an undergraduate and got his law degree from LSU. Jay Darden, whose 60th birthday is tomorrow, the lieutenant governor, who could not be with us on his birthday because he is going to be in Europe representing the state of Louisiana. He's a former student body president at LSU, and he did so when he was a law student. And it is something that I think is notable, that LSU has generally fared better in state budgets when graduates of the school have been governor.
Well, I would say that that is called the lesson of experience. When a person goes to an institution of higher learning, has that wonderful experience, which after all is a privilege not accorded to most of mankind, that person generally develops, say, a good feeling for the place. And so I think that shows that education is not necessarily a partisan business. John Bel Edwards, a Democrat, Jay Darden, a Republican, and yet both of them have good feelings about higher education, and both of them are avid supporters. What we really need is somebody who cares about Louisiana rather than cares about getting to be Postmaster General of the United States.
Postmaster General?
Well, that's what I have in mind for Bobby Jindal. That's a place where you can really do more with less.
Okay, so you're not a fan of our governor.
A fan is something that creates a lot of wind, and the state regime does that for sure. And if that wind will help the sail lead out of town, well, I'm in favor of that.
Well, Governor Blanco was also criticized for attention to LSU. Some thought that her allegiance was with the University of Louisiana Lafayette, and it should be. But LSU fared rather well when Governor Foster was in office, and he was an LSU alum. Governor Edwards takes some pride in how it was funded, how LSU was funded during his 16 years. He's an LSU graduate. And, of course, John McKithen, the world revolved. His world did about LSU football and LSU in general. He was kind of the modern-day Huey Long, modern-day as in 40 years ago. But you got a couple of candidates running for governor who have close ties to Louisiana State University. And one, David Vitter, who is not an LSU graduate. He went to Tulane and to Harvard, where you went. Does that really matter?
Well, I think what matters is, A, that all of these candidates have a higher education, and number two, they are candidates who have a more vigorous connection with the state and who care about the state as a whole, and number three, they're candidates who have enough diversity in their educational experience that they're not going to get into this crazy conflict between LSU and the rest of the world. One of the best things that's happened in the recent regime changes in higher education is that we do have some new college presidents, university system presidents like Sandy Woodley or like Ron Mason or like King Alexander, who think in terms of the totality of Louisiana higher education rather than simply guarding their own territory. That also is a step forward, and I think these gubernatorial candidates may have that larger perspective. Vitter, he went to Harvard. Maybe that will help him a little bit. Heaven knows he needs some help.
Okay, and that brings a question from Katie, or a comment saying, we've done so well with an Ivy League Rhodes Scholar as governor, let's do it again. And David Vitter, also very bright man, he's a Rhodes Scholar too, and he, of course, attended, last time I checked, Harvard was in the Ivy League. So we would be repeating the process again.
Well, I'm glad that education continues to be prized in our state. You don't find that everywhere. Really, Jim, I think we have sort of a mixed attitude towards the Ivy League and these big schools in this state. On the one hand, they are objects of veneration. Maybe that's a little superstitious. Maybe they're not really as good as they might seem. On the other hand, we've got a little bit of resentment that's been with us since the Civil War. We're a little bit nervous about these other places. So maybe we're at long last moving into a post-Civil War configuration where we can benefit from education in the great universities of America rather than become nervous about it.
Well, people from Harvard, such as Kevin Cope and Buddy Romer and David Vitter, they all talk well. Apparently, they do a good job of teaching people to speak at Cambridge. But but David Vitter, he's been muzzled to a large degree because he does not like to talk about the elephant in the room, and I think we know what that is. That's somewhat unfortunate.
It is indeed unfortunate, and I think it is, however, not only a charge that can be brought against David Vitter, but a charge that can be brought against the electorate as a whole. certainly I would hope that at some point in the future, maybe it will never come, but at some point in the future that the people of Louisiana would be mature enough that they can't that they could talk about such a topic without degenerating either into giggles or condemnations. People make mistakes now and then. David Vitter certainly has made an abundance of mistakes. Well, maybe not the worst mistakes and maybe not the least either.
Some nice bumper music here from Kevin Barnett. As we hit the break, and we'll pause for 90 seconds and return with Dr. Kevin Cope, president of the LSU Faculty Senate. 297-5633 is your number. Outside our area, 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local number. Outside the area, 877-217-5757. Higher education in Louisiana getting an uptick as far as funding from state government and Governor Jindal's, this is his seventh year in office. It involves other universities, too. Do you get any feedback from people, say at Southern or other universities in Louisiana?
Oh, yes, we do. Now, one problem that the current regime has is that it does not seem able to communicate with its educated constituencies. It's very good at putting out big-scale mass audience sorts of advertisements, but it doesn't really communicate the content of such important things as the budget. Nevertheless, we do hear general expressions of relief from people out at the regional campuses and in the other systems. Naturally, anything that looks like a turn in the right direction or even only stabilization is going to bring happy faces to the campus. But, of course, we have so many years of suspicion, worry, and anxiety that it's not as though we've suddenly moved into a euphoria.
297-5633 for Dr. Kevin Cope, 7 years president of the LSU Faculty Senate, also the author of such interesting items as Compendious Conversations.
That's what we're doing right here.
A Compendious Conversation. I like that. Enlightening Allegory and Criteria of Certainty, Truth, and Judgment in the English Enlightenment.
All of these are on the deep discount rack of the bookstore.
Here's a question. Actually, it's from an unnamed emailer. Let's see. It says, I'm trying to get back to the question here. Did Dr. Cope ever watch Mid-South Wrestling, and who is your favorite wrestler?
Well, I've heard about Mid-South Wrestling, but that was a little bit out of my region. I grew up in California, and then I went to school in New England, so I didn't really get exposure to that fine independent league. I have heard about it, but I can't really answer the question authoritatively. Sorry.
Okay. George Becker writes, will the Faculty Senate be taking a position on the Blue Cross proposed increase in state employee retirement OGB premiums because of changes?
Well, the Faculty Senate has taken a number of positions on OGB. One is it opposed the effort towards privatization. Of course, what we have now is sort of a half privatization, but it was opposed to that. Another is that it was opposed to monkeying with the premiums in such a way that it ran down all of the other insurance offerings that we have. If you don't know, the OGB offering is related by law to the other offerings that are available to state employees. So we're not altogether happy with what's going on at the Office of Group Benefits, and in particular this recent problem with the payment of physicians in a timely manner is a sorry development. We thought certainly that privatization was supposed to improve service, and we also thought that the government valued the services professionals. To delay their payments 6, 7, 8 weeks at a time is very unfortunate.
Don in Mid-City. Don, good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Kevin Cope.
Yes. How are you doing, sir?
Very well, and I hope you're enjoying this beautiful winter day, too.
Well, it's schizophrenic weather. I woke up this morning, went outside, I couldn't believe it. But anyway, you know, I've been following this governor for some years now, and I do recall that the axe went to higher education and to health care. And in this upcoming session, the governor has reversed lanes. He's actually in the fast lane in the opposite direction, where he's promising carrots, milk, honey, and all kinds of goodies if he can get his budget passed. My question is, where is the money coming from? why is it all that now, and why? But how can we, particularly the higher education administrators, especially LSU and the faculty, how can they possibly trust them behind the budget cuts and the hits that they took?
Thank you, sir. A couple of questions there. Where is the money coming from? Well, as Jim commented a few minutes ago, much of that money is coming from tuition increases. Certainly, we need tuition increases to come anywhere near what other similar institutions charge. But, of course, we have a state with lower income, and that creates problems. And we have a system called TOPS that, in effect, recycles tax money to pay for the tuition that's charged on the same people who pay taxes. So it's a real complex issue there. I think it's also important to remember that this very big sum of money, $142 million, is extended over a number of years. So it's not $142 million all at once. It's $142 million over 3 to 5 years. And it's also extended over a very large number of campuses. There are 4 university systems in this state, and there are about 34 different campuses. So when you start to distribute that, you find out it's not such an enormous sum of money. Your question, how can one trust the government? Well, maybe one can't, but it's necessary for those who manage universities to deal with what comes their way. So if extra money is coming by whatever means, it's going to be welcome. But I think we also need in all the universities better, stronger, and more extensive representation at the government so that we can bring our own policies into consideration rather than simply waiting for what might trickle down from the fourth floor down at the Capitol.
297-5633 for the well-groomed and articulate Dr. Kevin Cope.
Well, thank you, Jim. You beat me in both categories.
I don't know about that. I don't know of anybody who speaks more loquaciously and in rapid fire than does Dr. Cope, and on a variety of topics, including pro wrestling. You didn't answer, though. Who was your favorite wrestler?
Well, my favorite wrestler of all time was, without question, the great Freddie Blassie. That's probably before the time of a lot of people in your listening audience. He was most active in the 1960s. He was a big, burly kind of beefcake guy. Mm-hmm. Had a little bit of a southern flair. Called himself God's gift to women, as I recall. Referred to himself by the adjective the greatest. Was sort of a predecessor of Muhammad Ali in the same way that Liberace was a predecessor of Michael Jackson.
Freddie Blassie's mentioned in that song by R.E.M., Man on the Moon, right?
I believe that's Kaufman, correct.
Song.
And, of course, he also recorded his own hit 45 called The Pencil Neck Geek.
Yeah, that was his big thing. You're a pencil neck geek. You're not a pencil neck geek.
No, I'm not. I've moved up to the ballpoint pen.
Yeah. I bet you that some cleaners and some of us have faced this. You get an extra charge for your neck size, right?
I'm a 17 and a half, right? Yeah. This is what I call, I have a company in Germany that I use to buy my professional clothes. I have to pay extra there because of my size. I call it the giant tax.
The giant tax. But you brought up a good point about the tuition hike. That amounts to a tax hike because it increases the budget.
There's no question about that. That is, at the end of the day, people who are citizens of the state are paying more for the same services. If you pay for services provided by the government, you can call it a user fee, you can call it an assessment, you can call it whatever you please, but it is still, in my book, a tax. Now, maybe that's not wrong, but I would submit that ultimately we need a more rational tax system. And I would say that universities need to be financed in some other way than through tuition primarily. Otherwise, they're going to spend all of their time chasing after students, spending a lot of money trying to get people who don't want to go to college through it so that they can make the numbers.
Right. Here's a few questions I'm going to forward. And if you would like to pose one on the air, don't be shy. Dr. Cope certainly is not. 297-5633. Infrastructure at LSU. Do we have a crumbling infrastructure?
Crumbling might be an understatement. I would say that the cake is dried out and the breadcrumbs are on the floor. We have a number of buildings that are in serious disrepair. Indeed, my own office, the Faculty Senate office, is having a plumbing episode this very day. That having been said, I want to make clear that the people who maintain the buildings and facility services, both on the A&M campus and in other places around the state, are good-hearted people who do fine work for less than they are would be paid in industry. But that having been said, there's no missing the fact that the buildings are falling down around us. We have, I think, at LSU, a kind of de facto destroy and replace policy. That is, we've got some new buildings that have gone up or are going up, and we have others that are caving in. I think the worst problems are actually in the details.
Where is your office?
My office is in Pleasant Hall.
Pleasant Hall?
Yep, yeah. And it is pleasant for the most part. It's just got some unpleasant features.
Named after Ruffin Pleasant.
One of our great Americans.
A man synonymous with LSU football. So, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. He played for Charles Coates, I believe.
Listen, a guy that can carry a leather balloon 100 yards has at least got a talent.
Here's another question I'm forwarding before we go back to the phones. Healthcare at LSU. This is something that involves other campuses, but it's been a huge expenditure, and the governor has changed course from what has been done in the past. Are you following that?
Yes, I am following it. You want an assessment of the health care at LSU? Well, LSU is very fortunate. Through the work of Mr. Monaco in the HRM department, that's Human Resources Management, we've managed to keep our own LSU plan called LSU First afloat. That's better in every respect than what the Office of Group Benefits offers. However, there is no missing the fact that the cost for maintaining these programs is accelerating. And, of course, we have the perpetual problem in Louisiana that oftentimes we need to ship patients out of state or to other places where they can get required care. That's expensive as well. That goes back to the decline of our educational system because we don't have the medical material, either the workforce or the facilities, to cover everything. So, yes, we are seeing an acceleration in cost. That's not the worst cost that we've got at LSU. The worst cost is certainly the problem with the retirement plan.
Okay. And the hospital system, what do you think of where it's going?
I think, as I said once on this program several appearances ago, Dr. Johnson tells us that the quality of a society can be judged by the provision that it's made for the poor. The fact that we've taken at least a functional system that served the poor and spun that out and turned it into a kind of private operation for the harvesting of federal subsidies, I think, is unfortunate. And, of course, the latest news stories tell us that that system is not proving to be as solvent as expected. More money is needed. I guess that's what happens when you sign contracts that have blank pages in them.
Well, the healthcare system has always been a big part of LSU, and I'm sure King Alexander is dealing with something that is somewhat new to him.
Yes, I think this is not something that you would find at Cal State Long Beach. And I think that in the future, we're probably going to see some drift. Once we get everything totally privatized, people will realize that it doesn't work, and we don't even have enough patients for the medical students to practice their developing arts. So probably step by step, we'll see some of those functions creeping back into the university.
I saw Bobby Yarborough, the president of the LSU board, a few weeks ago, and he commented that he had heard your statement that I think it was such on this show that if LSU were to hire somebody to run the university without a PhD, which it's done in the past, that would be like Mr. Yarborough hiring somebody to run his company who is a vegetarian.
You've got it. Bobby Yarborough and I are friends. And I might say that under the board presidency of Bobby Yarborough, there's been an improvement in board-faculty relations. Bobby is showing himself to have some pluck and some skill. So I guess if he's got pluck, that he does chicken sausage as well as your standard boudin.
But I don't think a vegetarian would be running Manda's Fine Meats.
No.
I don't think that's going to happen. Chuck and Scott. Chuck, good morning. You're on with Kevin Cope.
Good morning. I have to tell you that I always enjoy your program when Dr. Cope is on because he speaks so clearly about key issues. But my question is, and I might have missed this because I just tuned in, who does he see as the most higher education or education generally friendly candidate that's got their hat in the mix for governor right now?
Well, that is a challenging question because any candidate who really wants to make it in office can't seem in our states to be too much of an elitist. But at the same time, such a candidate has to show some hope. So if I were to look at the candidates that are out there at this very moment, I think I would say that probably John Bel Edwards has shown the greatest inclination to listen to academic people. of course, what people do when they run for office and what they do when they get into office, oftentimes two different things. But so far, he's been the one that has reached out to us the most. In 7 years, the faculty have not had a single interview with the current governor. We've had two or three with Mr. Edwards.
You've asked the current governor?
We have not directly asked the current governor. That is true, Jim. However, we have made a number of statements in public editorials that we would welcome any kind of representation from the state government. And the response has always been a thundering silence.
I think the lieutenant governor or the state treasurer, both of whom may run for governor, Jay Darden or John Kennedy, they would welcome the opportunity to speak to the Faculty Senate.
And indeed, we've got them on the invitation
you
list.
Do?
You're always 10 steps ahead of me, but on my little computer, there is a half-composed letter first to John Kennedy and then to Jay Darden.
A half-composed letter. And I'm sure this man of words does not take long to write letters. Kevin Cope, how is the quality of instruction? A lot of instructors, professors, have disappeared amid the budget cuts. Has that affected LSU?
There's two ways to look at quality of instruction. One, there's the qualitative way. The people who are still at LSU are doing a bang-up job, no question about that, and working under difficult circumstances, communicating the best that was thought and spoken and written in the world. On the other hand, there's the quantitative, just as you said. We've had a decline of maybe 15 to 20% of the faculty. Those are the official numbers. I think, in fact, a few more have gone. And that has certainly changed the mood on the campus, such that students are not really feeling anymore as though they are in an institution that is moving forward full throttle. And, of course, the classes are a little bit larger, and they meet at odder hours. All of those have an effect.
Students, are they still top point?
Are they still what?
The students?
The students are, I think, plateauing. That is, there over the last 5 years, there was a major increase in the quality of students. No question about that. When I first came here back in 1983.
When I was in school.
Or, yeah, back in the solid days of Jim Ingster.
Students weren't as good,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, but that just shows that your achievement is all the greater for climbing that mountain. But back in those days, let's face it, the quadrangle was basically a kind of mix of beauty pageant and a mating pool. This is no longer the case. But I think that in the last year or so, we have not seen a huge improvement in the quality of students.
The quadrangle in the 80s was a mix of beauty pageant and mating pool, says Kevin Cope. Now, a listener, Casey, notes that LSU ranks 20th in the nation in the number of students participating in the SugarDaddies.com website that was front page. In fact, it was the lead story in The Advocate last week, one day. King Alexander says he's going to look into this.
Well, I hope he doesn't spend too much time on that website. But in any case, I would say that this is really a symptom. It's a particularly titillating symptom, and it's a symptom that doesn't speak well for those folks who are using the service. But it's an index of what I now call the childishness of higher education culture in Louisiana. In other words, we're talking about people who are interested in youth in its own sort. Let's do special activities to try to retain students. Let's give them centers to try to move them along. This is just the pathological version of that. I might add to that notion of childishness in Louisiana, the fact that in the management boards, the boards of supervisors, we hear a lot of people talking about the gospel of work and workforce development and the gospel of the self-made man, when most of them are, in fact, inheritors of family wealth.
Okay. Well, the SugarDaddies.com, another listener notes, LSU ranks 20th, and it is the alma mater of Jay Darden and of John Bell Edwards. Tulane, ranks 17th, is the alma mater of David Vitter. So all the candidates for governor, except for John Kennedy, who chose to do his educational pursuits out of state, are connected to SugarDaddies.com.
Let's hope we don't make it into the top 10.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Cope. Let's get an update very soon.
Thank you, Jim.
And we'll be back with one of your colleagues, Jensen Moore from the School of Mass Communication, who's an expert on Super Bowl commercials. This is the third year in a row. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Ingster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. And our guest is Dr. Jensen Moore, graduate of the University of Missouri School of Journalism, and She's been at LSU 3 years, and we've been with her 3 years talking about Super Bowl commercials. That's one of her specialties, advertising in sports. Good morning, Dr. Moore.
Good morning, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, first of all, the controversy. There were a lot of spots, $4 million a pop to be on the Super Bowl telecast, which was viewed by more people than any television program in the history of the world. One of them that I guess has generated the most controversy is one from Coca-Cola. What's going on with this?
Well, it was the Coca-Cola ad that had people singing America the Beautiful in different languages. And immediately on Twitter, which is where a lot of people were discussing Super Bowl ads this year, it started developing a track about speak English and how dare you sing our song in a language other than English. And so it then filtered from Twitter onto Facebook. People started Facebook posts about it as well. And now it has been, you know, an ongoing thing for the last 3 days where people are talking about whether or not that was a beautiful display of diversity or whether it was an anti-American sentiment.
It's amazing. People would get upset about that sort of thing.
Well, that was kind of what struck me is because, you know, the only people who were native to America are Native Americans. And so to say that you should speak English when we're all brought here from some other country is a little ironic.
The ad that Dr. Moore is speaking of ranked 13th among the USA Today consumer-judged ad meter for best Super Bowl commercials. So a lot of people did like it. And for those who might have missed it, I think we have a sampling of the Coca-Cola commercial that's generated the most controversy from Sunday's Super Bowl telecast.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for tus olas de granos tambar, your peace in the tzakuti, soy baba.
And I don't think there's any mention of Coca-Cola there. It's all subliminal, isn't it?
Yeah, it was all part of showing just the diversity of America and celebrating the melting pot of the different cultures that, you know, have come to represent America.
But it offended some people, and social media has made these kinds of controversies take a life of their own.
Yes, we have seen, certainly recently, social media has sparked its fair share of people speaking their minds, but in ways that we can't then come back and say mm-hmm. anything to the people because it is, you know, a space where you don't have that identity, so to speak.
Well, some big names were featured in the Super Bowl ads, including Bob Dylan. His ad was ranked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9th best among the ad meter respondents for USA Today. And his ad was for Chrysler of all products. It just seems to me Bob Dylan might be driving a different kind of vehicle, but apparently he's a Chrysler guy.
Yeah, that one struck me as strange. We saw Eminem in, you know, the Chrysler spot in the past, and Eminem has a very strong relationship to Detroit because that's where mm-hmm. he's from. Bob Dylan is not from Detroit, so
he's from Minnesota.
To have that, you know, to have Bob Dylan be the spokesperson was a little strange. The other thing is it was a 120-second spot, which is unheard of in Super Bowl advertising, yeah. where you're paying $4 million for a 30-second ad to have Bob Dylan go on for 120 seconds.
So is it 4 million times 4? Is that the way it works?
It's certainly more, but it wouldn't be times 4.
Well, I bet it was over $10 million.
Yeah, and, you know, just the fact that Bob Dylan is, you know, his music is anti-capitalist, anti-government. Mm-hmm. To have him be, you know, your poet speaker for Chrysler, it was a little bit of a strange connection there.
297-5633 for Dr. Jensen Moore. She specializes in advertising and sports. And Veronica in Denham Springs, you're on the air. Good morning, Veronica.
Hi. Do you think Coca-Cola underestimated the xenophobia of America? Because Coke now is more of an international company. We're not their growing market. America isn't their growing market anymore. Thanks.
I think that they were trying to make a statement. And I do think that they underestimated the xenophobia of Americans. But at the same time, if you look at that ad, that was also the first ad ever during a Super Bowl to have images of a gay couple. And they did it very quickly in the montage, and they kind of snuck it in. But it was there, and if you noticed it, there aren't a lot of people who are complaining about that. They're complaining about singing America the Beautiful in different languages. And so I just feel like people wanted to look at the ads this year and find something to complain about.
I didn't even notice the gay couple.
It was very quick. It was two gentlemen, and they're going through holding hands. And
really?
So.
Well, that's something else that people can complain about if they so choose. And let's face it, some people are looking for things to complain about. As stated, there were many spots with famous people. One of those that apparently didn't work out, as far as those who responded, they didn't like this spot with Scarlett Johansson. It was one of the lowest rated for SodaStream. You would think anything with Scarlett would be a hit, but this one didn't work out as well as anticipated.
Well, I think part of the reason with that is it had been promoted earlier that week as an ad that was going to be cut from the Super Bowl ad, and that it wasn't going to be shown, and so a lot of people had seen it already, and they were in awe that this was going to be taken away from the Super Bowl advertising. And then when they finally saw it, they were like, "Well, we've already seen it; it's not that big of a deal," and so it didn't rank as high.
Well, New Orleans area native Ellen DeGeneres was featured, and hers was kind of the middle of the pack. What was she promoting?
She was promoting Beats music, and I loved that ad. I thought it was so cute, and it plays on the opening montage of her own show where she dances with the audience, and in this ad, she danced to a number of different music genres, and it was just so cute to see her move from genre to genre and then finally find her groove in the last spot, and so it really was promoting that Beats music idea of finding your own music to dance to.
Tim Tebow was on not once but twice for T-Mobile, showing that even if you can't make an NFL roster, you can still be in the Super Bowl.
Yes, and immediately after the game, we started seeing Tebow memes pop up on Facebook that said that, he was the only quarterback that showed up that day for the Broncos. So,
well, the Budweiser spots were ranked 1 and 2. The number one was the Clydesdales Puppy Want to Stay Together spot. This one ran late in the game, too. And surprisingly, the audience hung in there despite a 43-8 blowout by Seattle over Denver. Most of the audience stayed, and it was the most watched program in the history of television. Why do the Budweiser spots always do well?
They have this mix of emotionality and cute animals. And let's face it, we all like to look at cute animals. That's why cats are the number one thing that's seen on YouTube videos. But they mix those two things together really well, and they tug at the heartstrings, and they just get you to really feel like it is, the story that they tell and the way that they do it. They get you to feel like it is just a down-home American thing that you could see every single day if you went to the Clydesdale farm.
Well, this one was by far, it is an overwhelming choice when you look at the score as the best of the bunch. Let's give a listen to the Clydesdales Puppy Want to Stay Together commercial, 60 seconds, number one with a bullet, Sunday night, the most watched television show in the history of the medium.
Burning low, only miss the sun when it starts to snow, only know you love her when you let her go, only know you've been high when you're feeling low, only hate the road when you're missing home,
only know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go.
I think you have to see that one to appreciate it, but Budweiser also had the number one commercial last year, according to the USA Today ad meter. It was a man who raised a Clydesdale is reunited with a horse at a parade. And we have seen the comeback of one Arnold Schwarzenegger, the former governor of California, disgraced because of an affair and a child with his maid. He is now front and center, and you couldn't help but laugh at Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I liked the interplay of the, you know, the actors and the famous, you know, it really bothered me. That series of ads with the epic night, there's just something about them that made me feel like that Bud Light had wasted $4 million repeatedly throughout the Super Bowl. And it was cute to see Don Cheadle and Arnold Schwarzenegger. It just didn't resonate with me.
Okay. Didn't score with Dr. Moore. 297-5633 is your number. Bruce in Walden, good morning. You're on WRKF, Bruce.
Hey, guys. Hey, Jessica. You know, my son works at the mill that did about half of those commercials. But my question really had to do more with, do you think that Coke ad maybe foreshadows some return to some social awareness and conscience within the advertising industry?
I sure hope it does. It would be really nice if we got back to that, you know, consciousness and started thinking about social issues and even, you know, promoting some more civic engagement, because that is certainly one of the things that I'd like to see more of these organizations do, is tie into some of that social responsibility and really let people know that they aren't just operating as far as, you know, to make money, but they're operating to give back, and that they have an idea of what their values are and they're trying to give back to the greater good.
There were a lot of automotive spots, as there usually are, and some were high ranked and others were not, even Maserati getting in the race. But we got, I mean, Toyota, Chevrolet, Jaguar, it was Honda, full of Volkswagen, full of automotive spots. But the number one of all of them for automotive spots was the one by Bob Dylan for Chrysler. How about that?
Well, Hyundai actually beat them out.
Okay,
in the top five with their ad where the father and son were driving together in the Hyundai car, saved the son from an accident where the father had been protecting him in the past, and now the car was going to protect him.
You are correct. It is ahead of the Chrysler one. They're both in the top 10, but Hyundai was number 5. Now, Doritos had the third best spot, the time travel booth, and the absolute worst, according to the meter. The best was time travel booth, and the worst was Kid Rides Dog Lasso's Doritos. Why does one work and the other does not?
Well, the time travel booth really was a spoof on the Clint Eastwood, you know, the old man coming off the porch and telling people to get off of his yard. And I think that worked for people because they made that connection, and they could understand how that would work. Whereas the lassoing the Doritos was a little more phantasmic. It didn't have a real story to it. And people really like a narrative. They like a story, and they could get behind the time travel booth because they saw the story in that.
All right, 297-5633 is your number as we round it out with Jensen Moore, who specializes in this sort of thing. It is an art. And in a very expensive art, a lot of money goes into this. How much preparation is involved in a commercial for the Super Bowl?
Well, I mean, they're probably preparing for next year's Super Bowl ads as we speak. They're probably, you know, going back and evaluating what worked and what didn't, and whether they wasted $4 million and trying to see what they can plug in for next year.
That is a lot of money.
It is, but I mean, if you break it down per audience member, and as you said, this is the all-time largest audience that we've ever had, it actually comes out to about $9 per person to advertise to that many people. So yeah, $4 million sounds like a lot, but if you look at something like, you know, American Idol, where they advertise, you know, a spot and it's $40 per person to advertise to that audience, it really per person breaks down to be a much better spend.
Well, when you're talking about raw numbers, but after a while, do you get tired? Like, I would think that in a football game, a close one, being in the fourth quarter would be a good thing. But in a game like this, 43-8, even though people were not tuning out, according to the reports from Nielsen, they still may have been halfway paying attention by the time Seattle got five touchdowns ahead.
Well, and I was following along on Twitter, and I saw a lot of people who were staying tuned just to watch the ads. The one that won, the Budweiser ad with the puppy, had actually been promoted earlier in the week, but people were waiting till that fourth quarter because they're like, oh, I haven't seen the puppy ad yet. Where's the puppy ad? And so they were really staying for those ads that they thought were cute, and you know they hung around there for the advertising, even though they certainly weren't hanging around to see how Denver was going to do.
Leonard Joseph notes, in the end, the ads promoted sugar, salt, fat, and the burning of carbon.
Yes, they certainly did.
And did the Super Bowl halftime show make Bruno Mars a superstar? That's the other burning question.
Well, I mean, it's been shown in the past that the record sales for each performer have gone significantly up after the halftime show. And I'm going to guess that based on how well he performed, that his are going to go up as well. And we've already seen a jump in the Red Hot Chili Peppers sales. Their hits were at, I believe, number 19 or 20 earlier in the week, and now they're up to number 12. So they've already seen a jump in their greatest hits album.
Well, thank you, Dr. Jensen Moore, for joining us today, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
You bet.
Before the next Super Bowl.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Our pleasure. And we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, thank you for listening and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.